Hello, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guest today has been described as multi-talented, and that's just the start of it. Cheyenne Jackson has starred in a sold-out one-man show, Back to the Start. He was awarded Outstanding Broadway Debut for his role in All Shook Up. On television, he played Tina Fey's boyfriend on 30 Rock and an evil choir coach on Glee. He's done award-winning movie work, and he recently sold out Carnegie Hall, by the way. I had the pleasure of working with him on another sold-out show, The Power of Two. So it's my great pleasure to work with him once again. Cheyenne Jackson, welcome to Song Travels.
Thank you. It's nice to be here at Song Travels.
The whole concept of the show is about song in all of its variety, all of its different forms and faces, and You are very, very eclectic, and that's one of the reasons I was excited to have you as part of this venture.
Oh, thank you. I've always had a very, I guess you could almost say manic love of music and styles. Music is everything to me. It has been since I was a little kid growing up in Idaho. So genres and directions and styles of music, I never really had any strong opinions on what I didn't like. It was everything to me always. So I think that's why I love doing so many different styles of things.
Is your family musical?
My mom is very musical. My dad is completely tone deaf, bless his heart.
Can't hear anything off key? I mean, he can't even tell if he's...
Surprisingly, he can whistle perfectly on key with vibrato, and it's really beautiful, but it's a strange thing. He cannot sing to save his life. And sometimes for fun, we would make him sing. We would sing a Spoonful of Sugar from Mary Poppins,
right?
Just so we could all laugh at him. And we were like, Dad, do it. Because it's just so bad. My mom has a beautiful, untrained, natural voice that she just, you know, I don't know where it came from. Her dad, maybe. Stunning. Just, you know, taught herself to play the guitar. So she was always singing Joan Baez and Joni Mitchell and Bob Dylan and Judy Collins. And, of course, we sang in church. But, yeah, music was everything in our house. Taught me to sing harmony when I was, like, 3.
Sounds like with those artists, was there a guitar in your life, in your family life?
Yes.
You want to play guitar or something?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I play a teeny bit of guitar, but my mom plays the guitar. My little sister can play the guitar. Yeah, it's not like the Von Trapps, but it's definitely prevalent. And music is, you know, it's everything.
And I only discovered recently that you also play the piano, which made me so jealous that you have yet another talent.
Like, well, I've never played the piano in public. That will change this year. We can talk about that later. But I took lessons for a hot second growing up. But I did not learn how to read music. I have such a good ear that the teacher would, you know, she'd say, this is your song, and we'd learn it. And I'd say, I think it would help if you played it first just so I could get a sense of what it's like. And then she'd play it, and then I'd memorize it just from hearing it, and then I would play it. And she's like, oh, you're brilliant. One day, that lasted about, 6 weeks or so. And one day she came in with flashcards of musical notes. And she's like, well, what's this? What's this? And I was busted and I didn't know and quit piano lessons. But I've kept it up on my own and I definitely do love to play.
That's wonderful.
Thanks.
It's great to hear you do it. The first song that you've chosen to perform today is one written by Tom Waits.
And yes.
I was talking with Bette Midler recently about Tom Waits, and she recorded his Shiver Me Timbers on one of her early albums. He's a very interesting character to me. Do you know much about him?
I don't. I just know some of his early stuff. And this song in particular means a lot personally to me because it's the first song. It was playing on my first date with my husband. So, yeah, it was in Seattle, and he played a version of this song, Downtown Train.
Well, it's my pleasure to accompany you on Tom Waits' Downtown Train.
Outside another yellow moon punched a hole in the nighttime, yes. Climbed through your window and down the street. I'm shining like a new dime. The downtown trains are full. Oh, those Brooklyn girls, they tried so hard to break out of their little worlds. You wave your hand and they scatter like crows. They have nothing that can capture your heart. They're just thorns without the rose. Be careful of them in the dark. If I was the one you chose to be your only one. Baby, can't you hear me? Can't you hear me now? Will I see you tonight on a downtown train? Stairs in your doorway, walk down your street and past your gate, stand by the light at the four-way, you watch them as they fall, they all have heart attacks, they'll stay at the carnival, they'll never win you back, we'll see you tonight.
That was Downtown Train by Tom Waits. Thank you. That was beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Very evocative piece.
Thank you. And you just played that for the first time a couple minutes ago. That's amazing.
Well, that's what we do. We aim to please. I don't know who we are, but yeah,
you.
It's fun. It's fun to accept the challenge. And one of the things I like about this program is being challenged to play in different musical styles to which I'm not always accustomed.
Yeah.
So thanks for that.
Yeah, sure.
Now, early musical influences.
Yes.
I remember you told a story about going to a yard sale or a garage sale or something.
Yes. Well, I grew up in a little town in northern Idaho, and I promised my mom I would stop talking about this, but, you know, what are you going to do?
One more time for posterity.
One more time for posterity.
Now, your family didn't have great means as you were
growing that's
up.
Right. We definitely, we were poor. You know, but we didn't know. I didn't know we were poor. I never wanted for anything. You know, I had everything I needed. But we did have – my dad built our house in the woods on 20 acres, and we had an outhouse, and we had, for a time, no running water and all that stuff. But
– were you hippies?
My parents were hippies, yeah. They definitely were. And we grew our own vegetables, and we had – I was allergic to cow's milk, so my mom – and got two goats named Harmony and Melody.
Aww.
So I could have goat's milk. It was definitely a gorgeous way to grow up, just out in the woods and nature and amazing. But, there wasn't a lot of money or things to, you know, there wasn't in such a small town. The town has like 1,200 people. There wasn't really like children's theater or anything like that. So any kind of outlet I had musically was always kind of, we had to be crafty and find what that would be. And what I found is that I love to go to yard sales and you know, go through people's albums. I guess I was like a 10-year-old hoarder. I don't know. I definitely liked to, you know, gather my precious things around me, most of which were albums. And, the cast album of Annie I got, and I just couldn't believe something so fantastic existed.
And was that the first musical you were aware of? Well, you must have been aware of other
musicals. I wasn't – Broadway in its – as a concept, I didn't know what that was. I thought Broadway was one theater, like the Broadway theater. I didn't realize it was a, you know, a state of mind.
And so much more.
And so much more. But I think that's the first time I knew that's a Broadway show. And, you know, people are – those little girls are on Broadway singing that. And it was – blew my mind that that could be your job. But I think, yeah, that's one of the first shows that I definitely latched onto. And yeah, and then, you know, maybe I was 10 or 11, and then Les Mis toured through Spokane, Washington, which is the big town, like about 45 miles away from where we were. And I couldn't believe such an amazing thing existed. And
you went as a family?
In school, actually. Our French teacher, Miss Henry, took us. She was the culture lady, and she's like, you guys, we're going to see Les Miserables, and just so you know, there's some ladies of the night, and there's some, so you have, we had to do, you know, permission slips from our parents to go see this, and I mean, it just blew my mind. These people were so amazing, and then that's kind of initially, I think, where I thought, I think I'm going to do that for a job. I don't know how, I don't know when, but it was always in my DNA, I think.
Do you feel like it was predetermined in a certain way?
I do. I mean, music, I knew whatever I did would have to have music in the forefront of it and at the heart of it, because that's just, it's everything to me. I mean, my whole, you know, everybody's life has a soundtrack, but I feel like it's a perfect example. I don't know if I have perfect pitch. I think I have relative perfect pitch, but when I worked at a paper mill for a summer in high school. I was driving the forklift and, you know, shoveling these big giant sheets of paper into the pulp, you know, machine. And my machine would be like, beep, beep, beep. And I could never back up without harmonizing with it. A third above, a third below, whatever I was feeling. But, you know, I would always, it's the sounds of life and you know, the subway train or whatever. But even back then, I remember I'd be like harmonizing with the beep of my forklift. And one of the guys would be like, what are you doing?
The rhythm of life.
Yeah, baby. Right.
So you were starting to tell a story about finding some music at a garage sale or a yard sale or something?
I did. There was a time in my, I guess, childhood, maybe 12 or so, right before puberty, where I was just obsessed with the leading ladies of jazz. I called them Billie Holiday, Lena Horne, Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald. And it was just, I don't know where I heard about them or how they all came into my consciousness, but I just, each of them equally and for different reasons, I was obsessed with the tonality of their voice and the flexibility and the emotion. And, you know, so I would sit in my room and copy it and whatever. Mm. One day I was at a yard sale and I happened, you know, I was sifting through, you know, the albums and the overalls or whatever was there. And then there was a tape, and on the tape it said Billy, Ella, Lena, Sarah. Like all four of them.
Amazing.
It was like a beacon of light was shining on this tape, and it was amazing. So I bought it, and I ran home, and I said, Mom, you're never going to believe this, but look at this tape I got. It's Billy, Ella, Lena, Sarah, all of them, and I, you know, was holding it up. And
was your mother aware of your passion for these jazz names?
Yes, but I think it was at those the moment she realized
You weren't going to have a sports career.
I wasn't going to have a big sports career.
Yeah. You could have, though.
I could have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the same time, there was pop music. When did you discover Elton John?
Well, actually, my parents were very, very Christian at the time. And so we didn't really – I was really only allowed to listen to Christian rock for a big period of like – maybe 1980 to 1986.
Did you like it?
So I did. I mean, Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant and, you know, Peter, you know, although those were kind of my jam. Like my first concert was a double concert of DeGarmo and Key and Amy Grant and David Meese, I think. Christian music fans will know who I'm talking about. Definitely that was kind of my first little foray into pop music. And then once my parents became a little more lenient and I started to explore other sounds of pop music. Then I found out about George Michael and Billy Joel and Elton John. And those three really resonated with me. And Sting, but I would say the first three. And Elton John, I mean, I loved all three of these men for different reasons, but Elton John's music really, really resonated with me. I always felt like he was talking to me. And yeah, so I think that was the first time I thought, oh, wow, that came out of someone's head. Like he was just walking around and thought, you know, thought of the melody too. It's fascinating to me and inspiring.
Well, let's do a number that actually was the first hit of his that I was aware of when I was growing up. It's Your Song.
Let's do it.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no, or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody that this is a song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. I sat on the roof and kicked off the moss. Few of the verses, well, they got me quite cross, but the sun's been quite kind. Well, I wrote this song, it's for people like you that keep it turned on. So excuse me for getting, but these things I do, you see, I've forgotten if they're green or they're blue. Anyway, the thing is, what I really mean, yours are the sweetest eyes I've ever seen. And you can tell everybody that this is your song. It may be quite simple, but I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how
that's a perfect song.
I think so. It really is. No matter how many times I hear it, I just love it. I used to sing it in my early 20s, like doing karaoke with friends, and I would always, you know, everybody's doing these big giant rock and roll, and I'm like, I'm gonna bring it down now. But I've just always really related to that song and loved it. That was good on the piano, too. That's hard stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. It's one of those songs that the accompaniment is so iconic, so then it's making choices of what to change, what to do differently, because it's also very spare, and there's many things that you can do with it.
That's right.
So the tendency is to, for me, is to gild the lily, so I always have to keep pulling myself
yes.
back. Which is a wonderful lesson for me.
Yeah. It's hard.
But enough about me.
Less is more is hard, though. It's hard for people. Oh, yes. I get it.
So what contemporary music do you like?
Oh, man. Contemporary music. I'm really a fan of Coldplay.
Mm.
This year I've been loving Adele, of course. Yeah. I love the timbre of her voice and her lyrical content.
One of the things that's interesting about music today, especially with recordings, is that it's hard to know what is totally produced in the studio and what is real musical talent. For example, with Adele, I think she's the real thing.
Right.
But it's so easy to fix everything. I was at the Hollywood Bowl, and mm-hmm. I followed a performer who mm-hmm. uses autotune, which corrects pitch, live in her shows.
What? How can you pitch correct something live?
They can do it now.
Wow.
So I've always been of the mind that you can't really tell about someone's real talent as a singer unless you're just listening to him standing around a piano.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, God, no, now knowing that you can actually correct it live, it makes me suspect to some of my favorite recordings. But Adele, you can just tell, is the real deal. Her live performances sound, I think, better than the recordings because it's just, you know, when you are in the pocket and in the zone and you are performing live and you hear well and there's good acoustics and you're just feeling in good voice, there's nothing better. And I feel like it's very exciting that she has become so amazing and that record was the number one record of the year because it's just such a throwback. Those songs could have been written any time, but, you know, it's so great that the kids are, you know,
embracing it.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that's really great is taking a contemporary song and stripping it down and doing something different with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't always tend to listen to pop music that way because I sometimes can't get past the production.
Right.
And I find myself drifting that I'm not even hearing the lyric.
Right.
Yet you have something now that you want to do that is very much stripped down from the original.
Yes, I do. I had the good fortune last year of working on Glee. And
how was that?
It was good. It was fun. It was very fun.
Evil. You were evil.
Yeah.
Evil coach,
yes. Yeah. The evil coach of Vocal Adrenaline, the rival choir, and fun. Just because I've known Matt Morrison for years, and Lea Michele, and all those, you know, Broadway kids. But I do love how they've made it cool to like Broadway again and be in it to. Really made it palatable and fun.
And choirs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was in show choir in high school, and it was not cool. I mean, it was cool to us. The 12 people that were there, we were like, we are awesome. But, you know, we were not the cool kids.
Show choirs are different now than they were 20 years ago.
I think so, yes. Yes.
Because the material, the repertoire, what they sing in show choirs is not the stuff that we sang in high school.
That's right. That's right. Our big number at our spring show in show choir was I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. And nowadays, they can do so many songs that are on the radio right now. I mean, I remember on Glee, they did Teenage Dream.
So this is a song that I want you to tell me about because okay. It's very pop. And how did you come to it?
Yes. The song is very, very pop. It's a Katy Perry song. And, you know, she's the first female artist to have 6 number ones on the Billboard 100. It's amazing. It's a huge feat. But her song is, you know, her songs generally, people, the perception is very fluffy and pop and catchy and maybe not so deep lyrically. But there, if you really dig and really listen, it was one of her first big hits, kind of a boy bandy, you know, 5-6 part harmony, really cool. I want to strip it down even more. And I think you'll be surprised with the melodic content.
Well, here we go.
Okay.
Teenage Dream.
You think I'm pretty with without any makeup on. You think I'm funny when I tell the punchline wrong. I know you get me, so I let my walls come down, down. Before you met me, I was a wreck, but things were kinda heavy. You brought me to life, now every February you'll be my Valentine, Valentine. Let's go all the way tonight. No regrets, just love. We can dance until we die. You and I will be young forever. You make me feel like I'm living a teenage dream. The way you turn me on, I can't sleep. Let's run away and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back. 'Cause my heart stops when you look at me, just one touch. Now baby, I believe this is real. So take a chance and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back. We drove to Cali and got drunk on the beach. Got a motel and built a fort out of sheets. I finally found you, my missing puzzle piece. I'm complete. Let's go all the way tonight. No regrets, just love. We can dance until we die. You and I will be young forever. You make me feel like I'm living a teenage dream. The way you turn me on, I can't sleep. Let's run away and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back. My heart stops when you look at me, just one touch. Now baby, I believe this is real. So take a chance and don't ever look back. Don't ever. Get your heart racing in my skin tight jeans. Be a teenage dream tonight. Let you put your hands on me if that's what you need. Be a teenage dream tonight, 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 tonight.
Thank you for giving me another perspective of Katy Perry's work.
I love it. Well, thanks for jumping in. Well, it's not easy.
I like the challenge. I really do. There's always so much for me to learn. Now, one of the things that you have been doing, speaking of learning, you have suddenly, in full bloom, been writing songs.
Right. I've always wanted to write music. I'm very musical. I know a good song when I hear it, and I should say, that I could probably write. I just was scared. I was scared to put it out there for whatever reason. People know you for a certain thing.
Do you feel stigmatized?
You know, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but I didn't feel like the timing was right. And also, I mean, my brother's a writer. My brother is a pastor, but also has 4 books out. So, I mean, I always wondered, like, you know, maybe that's his gift. And mine is, I've always been able to interpret a song. But I had a sense that I had music in me, music and lyrics. And I just needed somebody to kind of be the catalyst to help me take that step and see what would happen. And my dear friend Sia Furler, and if you don't know her, you gotta Google her, YouTube her. She's a genius, and I don't use that word that term lightly. She is really one of those amazing musical gems. I met her a couple years ago, and we became fast friends. And she's a writer. She's from Australia, and she's a pop singer, and has her huge career on her own. But in the last couple years, she's been transitioning to writing for other artists. She's just very open and encouraging. And she said, come into the studio with me, see what would happen if you just wrote a song. And I just said, you know what? Screw it. Let's just do this. I got to just get this fear out of my way and do it. And you know, because I saw you a couple of days after it happened, but I wrote my first song in the first week in July is my birthday. And it's almost as if my brain exploded, my head opened up, and my heart, everything that I've been working towards in my life, all of a sudden makes sense. And I know it sounds like a huge, deep wow, but it really has kind of blown my mind that I love it so much, that I'm good at it.
And it comes easily.
And it comes easily. And I have to say, my parents and my brothers and sisters, when I told them, you know, I'm writing now and I want to share some of it with you, they all just looked at me and said, we knew it would come back to this. Everything was always about music for you. I will always act, and my acting career is great, and I have a lot of stuff going on that side, but this is the next chapter for me.
How exciting.
Yeah.
I've been lucky enough to know a lot of songwriters, and it's fascinating to me how inspiration comes.
Yes.
Richard Rodgers was so extraordinarily facile. He could come up with tunes so easily. And some of the great songwriters went through periods where they felt that they were, quote, written out.
Mm.
Like Harold Arlen, at one point early in his career, thought that he didn't have the inspiration. Irving Berlin had a 2-year dry spell.
Really?
Those things happen. My friend Marshall Barer, who I've spoken of a lot, whom I adored and wrote Once Upon a Mattress, a classic Broadway musical.
Right.
He, later in his life, became very dependent on drugs. And he sometimes had to use different kinds of drugs to induce creativity. But once he became creative, it was amazing. And you're going to do a song with lyrics by Marshall.
Yes.
Music by Mickey Michael Leonard. And this is an interesting song because when you listen to it, it's about one thing.
Right.
But it actually was written inspired by something else.
Right.
It's a song that exhorts people to be whoever they are, to do what they want to do, and saying the time is now. But Marshall said that he was inspired to write it after the Stonewall riots. And so it's a song that is an anthem for perhaps gay rights. But if you don't know that, it's just a song that is about everybody marching to the sound of their own drummer.
And that's the best kind of song.
Indeed. The time has come.
To see who brave the night.
Boy, you sang that beautifully, Cheyenne.
Oh, thank you. You sound great. I was a little, you know, I've only heard you do this song before, so doing it in front of you, I was a little trepidatious, but thank you.
It was great. It was great. It was really great.
Thank you.
Well, there's more coming up in a moment with actor and vocalist Cheyenne Jackson. Our program is made possible, in part, by NPR and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art works. I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is Song Travels from NPR Music. Well, Cheyenne Jackson, from your pop sensibility, you also have a lot of experience singing standards. Of course, your Broadway career is a wonderful one because you really have extraordinary stage presence. But I love the experience of working with you at my nightclub, Feinstein's at the Regency at the Lowe's Hotel. Working out standards, working out routines on classic songs was a real joy for me because you bring a pop sensibility to songs, and it's fun when you can take something classic and totally reinvent it, as you did with this one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was very, very meaningful, that time, and also just I learned so much. I do approach everything with a pop sensibility, but my music teachers and everybody always said, you know, you were born in the wrong time. You just, the timbre of your voice, the tone of your voice, the style of music that you're drawn to, you know.
Do you feel you were born in the wrong time?
Not so much anymore. I feel like I'm forging my own little slot here, but I definitely relate. I definitely, music of the 40s and 50s, I definitely, like, there's something, I hear a little bit of it, and I just feel like, I don't know if I believe in reincarnation, but there's more of just a, oh, I like that. I definitely, hairs stand up on the back of my neck, and I feel like, oh, I've heard this before. So yeah, I love to come at these standards with a little bit of a, you know, a pop sensibility, and you know, I've just learned so much from you while doing that. So yeah, this song, this is Duke Ellington and Hoagy Carmichael, right?
Yeah, there's a verse, actually another song by Hoagy Carmichael appended to the body of this Ellington thing. And the thing that's fun about it is that it's usually done fast up-tempo jazz, and you have turned it into a torch song that gives that lyric such incredible depth. So we're actually going to play a track from the recording of our show. The CD is called The Power of Two, and this is Cheyenne Jackson.
I get along without you very well. Of course I do. Except when soft rains fall and drip from leaves, then I recall the thrill of being sheltered in your arms. Miss the Saturday dance. I heard they crowded the floor. I couldn't bear it without you. I don't get around much anymore. I thought I'd visit the club. I got as far as the door. Well, they'd have asked me about you. I don't get around much anymore. Darling, I guess my mind's more at ease. but nevertheless, why stir up memories? I've been invited on dates. I might have gone, but what for? It's awfully different without you. I don't get around much anymore. Different without you. I don't get around much anymore. Awfully different without you. I don't get around. Get along without you very well.
Wow, Cheyenne, I love that powerful ending.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's a great, great arrangement. And I love, like you said, that song is initially done as, you know. Yeah, and I thought of it as somebody who is an agoraphobic. I don't get around much anymore. It's very
That's
melancholy.
That's the backstory.
Yeah, I really feel like it's, you know, somebody who just can't get out of their house anymore, and for whatever reason, their heart's broken. And so that's how I always approach that song. And no matter where I've done that song, it always has the same great response. So I'm glad to have that in my arsenal.
Do you have a story behind everything you sing? Do you create a story?
Yeah. And it's funny because you just grow and mature as a singer and as an interpreter of songs. I think of songs I sang when I was 19 or 20 and 21, and I didn't even think about it. I just thought about sounding good. I just thought about singing the notes pretty and singing them correctly and producing a good sound, but I wasn't really thinking about what I was saying. It's such a basic, you know, principle, but I just didn't get it. And as something clicked one day, and you know what I think it was? I think it was, I went to Barbara Cook. I think it was like
masterclass.
It was a show, but it was a masterclass, but it was a full on concert. And I was way in the back. My friend David from Seattle took me, it was about 9 years ago. And I understood I couldn't see her at all. She was just, you know, a little dot down there, but I could, every word she thought of, every word she said within the song, I understood where it came from. And I thought, if I can, you know, do a fraction of that. So, yes, definitely. I definitely have a story for every song. It has to live. It has to be real.
It's a great lesson because people can feel the difference.
So yeah.
They feel it.
Yeah. You can do it. When you go and see somebody sing, you're like, they're not thinking about what they're singing right now. And then that means I'm not. I'm right. Thinking about, you know,
the groceries or something.
Yeah. Downton Abbey or something. My fave.
Oh, yeah. Love it, too. So our show that we did together,
yes,
was called The Power of Two,
yes,
and we chose that title thanks to you,
mm-hmm,
because it's not only obvious in what it states, but it also is the combination of two very different musical sensibilities that came together. And this was a song that I was not familiar with. I'd heard the Gals,
yeah,
Indigo Girls, but it wasn't really on my radar. And I have to say, it was my favorite thing that I did in that show with you.
But it took you a while to get to that point.
Boy, did it.
Because you were fighting it a bit and like not – you're always game and you're always ready to, as we've talked about, stretch yourself and make yourself grow and make yourself learn. But it was a stretch. It's totally a different world than what you normally are known for doing. So I really applaud you just jumping in, and you did. And sometimes at first you said you felt silly and you'd ask us, how does this sound? I just don't even know. I feel, but then it became everybody's fave. So I'm so glad you did that.
Me too. Well, we're going to play the title track from the CD, The Power of Two, yours truly and Cheyenne Jackson.
Gone someplace. I pick you up and in the trunk I've packed a cooler and a two-day suitcase. 'Cause there's a place we like to drive way out in the country. 5 miles out of the city limit, we're singing and your hands upon my knee. So we're okay, we're fine. Baby, I'm here to stop your crying. Chase all the ghosts from your head. I'm stronger than the monster beneath your bed. I'm smarter than the tricks played on your heart. We'll look at them together, then we'll take them apart. Adding up a total of a love that's true. Multiply life by the power of two. You know the things that I am afraid of, I'm not afraid to tell. And if we ever leave a legacy, it's that we loved each other well. I've seen the shadows of so many people trying on the treasures of youth, but a road that fancy and fast ends in a fatal crash. And I'm glad we cut off to tell you the truth. So we're okay, we're fine. Maybe I'm here to stop your crying. Chase all the ghosts from your head. Stronger than the monster beneath your bed. Smarter than the tricks played on your heart. We'll look at them together, then we'll take them apart. Adding up a total of a love that's true. Multiply life by the power of two. Little trinkets of temptation, something new instead of something old. All you gotta do is scratch beneath the surface, and it's fool's gold. It's fool's gold. Fool's gold. Now we're talking about a difficult thing, and your eyes getting wet. But I took us for better and I took us for worse. And don't you ever forget.
Now the steel bars
between me and a promise suddenly bend with ease. And the closer I'm bound to love to you, the closer
okay, we're fine. Baby, I'm here to stop your crying. Chase all the ghosts from your head. I'm stronger than the monster beneath your bed. Smarter than the tricks played on your heart. We'll look at them together, then we'll take them apart. Adding up a total of a love that's true. Multiply life by the power of two. Multiply life by the power of two.
The power of two. Cheyenne, I have to say that when I hear that track, it makes me feel very happy, and I am not always happy listening to my own recorded vocals.
Oh, me too. I feel the same way. I don't enjoy often listening to my own stuff just because I tend to just hear the mistakes or the perceived things that, you know, want to change. But that was a very special time in my life. When did we do that? 2 years ago,
I guess? About that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a great opportunity to share the stage with you and then to actually be able to preserve it on a CD.
And right. We did it all live.
That's right.
All live.
That's right. Yeah, and some of those were one take. I remember it was so in us.
Yes.
And it was definitely, thank you. That was great. So fun.
I really appreciate this time with you. Thank you for the pleasure of your company, for sharing your musical soul with us. And I certainly look forward to all of the music that's going to be pouring from you in the years to come.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm so thrilled to have this opportunity and to be here. I could talk about music with you for hours, and we have off the air.
Yes.
And so it's nice to actually share our love for musicality in all of its forms on the radio. This last song I want to close with, this is a song that I've done a few different times, and my friend Ben Toth kind of mashed it up with another favorite song of mine. I thought it's a nice way to end our day.
Well, it's my pleasure to accompany you. What a wonderful world.
I see trees of green and red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The color of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, for old lang syne.
Cheyenne Jackson, thank you for being on Song Travels.
Thank
what a
you.
Great pleasure.
Wow, that was a journey.
Indeed. Well, all the best to you, and take care.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Song Travels with Michael Feinstein and his guest, Cheyenne Jackson. Song Travels is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Hearst Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Friedman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson. The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. We love to hear from you. Our email address is songtravels@scetv.org. Our postal address is ETV Radio, 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Song Travels comes from NPR and the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.